We're on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, and we're about to start the sugya of Amar Rava, which is a little bit below Tosfos Tirur Maaskal Aval, but let's just review quickly the sugya of Rav Papa. And that was the case of a para gnuvalo. He had stolen a para, and then he shechted it on Shabbos. So he had stolen it on a weekday, and in such a case he became Chayv Mishum Gneva already before Shabbos, and then he shechted the animal on Shabbos. And Rav Papa says that in such a case, we cannot apply the principle of Kimlei B'Derabimineh, and instead he has to pay, even though he gets Misa for Shabbos, because then Rav Papa continues and he says, if he had borrowed a cow and then he shechted it on Shabbos, potter. Which means the following, that since he was not chayev for gneva, the parah came into his possession b'shus, shus bailim. He had every right to use the animal. So as long as the animal is alive, he's not chayev. He becomes chayev the moment he shechts the animal. And at that very moment, he violated the Isur Shabbos. So here we can apply the principle of kimlev d'ramine, this absolute simultaneity. So the Gemara tells us that Rav Papa, this is the thesis that we studied yesterday of Rav Acha, Rav Papa's Chiddush is coming lafuke a certain Hava Mina. We could have thought that the Chiyuv for She'ela, like the Chiyuv Mizonos, which we'll talk about in just a second, is Chal from the moment of Meshicha. As soon as he took the para into his possession as a shoel, at that very moment, he became chayev for any loss of the animal. Where do we see such a concept that immediately with the meshicha, the shoel becomes chayev? We see it with regard to mizonos. And this is another statement of Rav Papa in Masechta Bav Metzia called Mishas Meshicha is Chayev Lei B'Mizonos. From the moment of Meshicha, he's Chayev B'Mizonos. Rav Papa made this comment in the context of Chasimas HaPara. Right, the Torah says, Lo Safsam Shar B'Disho. You're not allowed to muzzle the animal while you work with it. A person borrows someone's cow, Reuven borrows Shimon's cow, and Reuven muzzles the cow, vidoshba, and he's using the cow, let's say, for disha. He's plowing a field, and he gets malchus for the violation of the sachso shor vidisha, the fact that it's a parsha ulo, it's not his para, is irrelevant. And he has to pay a certain fee for chasima. Why? Because he was chayv in mizonos. So he gets malchus and he pays. Now the fee is called arba kavim lepara ushlosha kavim lechamor. So depending on which animal it is, how much the animal is used to getting fed, that's how much he's going to have to pay. So the sugi of Metzia raises the question of Ein Adam Lokim Mishalim. How could he get malchus and at the same time pay? Whenever there's an overlap of malchus and mamon, then, well, we had Machlokas Ula and Rabbi Yochanan. According to Ula, he pays, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, he gets malchus. So Rav Papa says that the reason why we don't apply the principle of Ein Adam Lokim Mishalim is because there's no simultaneity between the malchus and the mammon. And why is that so? Because although the chiyuv malchus emerges with the moment of chasima, when he works the para, and the para is muzzled, but the chiyuv mizonos of arba kavim was generated from the time of Mashiach. As soon as the she'ela began, there's a contractual agreement in the context, or shall we categorize it as she'ela, and that generates a chiyuv mizonos. So the chiyuv mizonos predates the chiyuv malchus. And in such a case, he pays, and then he gets malchus for violating the chasima. Now, if we apply that structure of Rav Papa to our case of a shoel that shechts an animal, which means that he's not able to return the animal because he killed the animal, so let's compare that to a case of onus. Obviously, this is not a situation of circumstances beyond his control. He deliberately slaughtered the animal, but let's take a case of onus. The par dies. Now, a shoel has to pay for onsen. The only patur in shoel is mesa machmas malach. If the animal dies because of the work, then he rented it, he borrowed it for that purpose. Not rented, borrowed it. But if the animal drops dead of old age, then the shoel has to pay. Because the shoel is chayiv to return the para or pay its value if he cannot return the para. So in such a case, we should apply the following principle. Instead of kimlev the rabmine, just like in the case of chasima in Bav Metzia, Bar Papa said, we go, the chiv moment is incurred from the time of the Mashiachas HaSheila, from the time that the She'ila is generated. If we apply that here, any onus that happens later on, so that irua, that situation of onus that came about later on, is lamafrei, he's chayev to pay for that from the shah she'ela. As if to say that when I borrow a cow, the moment I borrow the cow, I have to pay. That's it. Again, unless I can return the cow, obviously. So now, what happens is, in the case of para gnuvalo, right? So what happens is, so gnuvalo, that was the resha rapov, that was the simple case. Therefore, there he incurred a chiyuv keren before Shabbos, and tvach of Shabbos he's going to be chayv, fine. Now it's a para she'ulalo, that's the sefer Rav Papa. So in such a case, since the animal was shechted on Shabbos, and we would want to apply the principle of kimlev the rabbinate to pater him up, and we would say in the Hava Mina, this is what the Gemara says, Salkadai Techav Mina, I would have thought without Rav Papa, that from the time of the Mashiach of She'ela, he incurred a chiyuv to pay for any loss of the animal. We'll call it a chiyuv onsim. So therefore, when he shechts it on Shabbos, he becomes chayv b'tashlumin l'mafreya from the moment of She'ela. Because as we said before, when he borrows the cow, he takes upon himself an absolute chiyuv to pay for the cow. And the chiyuv misa is only incurred on Shabbos at the moment of Shechita. Kamash b'lod, Rav Papa's chiddush is no. Then in this case, we will apply the principle of kimlev with the rabbinate, because it's different than the case of mizonos. In the case that Rav Papa is addressing, where he shechted the animal, as long as the animal was alive, then the shoel, the shoel is not chayv to pay domin. He just has to return. He just has to return the animal. The animal is alive and well. So the chiyuv for gzela is generated by the moment that he shechts the animal, and at that very moment of shechita, he incurs a chiyuv misa. So both the Chiyuv Momon as a Gazlan and the Chiyuv Misa for violating Shabbos were held together at the moment of Tvicha. It's not similar to the case of the Chiyuv Mizonos, which is Chal, which emerges with the moment of Meshicha Sapara, because the Chiyuv Mizonos is embedded, shall we say, it's inherent in the Chiyuv Shmira. Meaning he has to do, as a shoal, everything that he has to do in order to preserve the health of the animal. So within the framework of Shmira, he's chai bishas meshicha. Meshicha generates any chiv meshicha. It generates any chiv shmira. And shmira is inherently the essence of what a shoal is all about. The chiyuve shoel, a chiyuve shmira. Shoal is one of four shomer. And if the shoel does anything that could bring about the weakness of the animal, then the shoel would have to pay. So any chiyuve shmira are clinched at the moment of Meshicha. Let's call it Pshia B'Shmira. It's the fact that he doesn't feed the animal and guarantee to preserve its health that, and its well-being. That itself is a Chiyuv Shmira. That's a Pshia B'Shmira. And its Chiyuv Shmira is clinched with Meshicha. So any violation of a Chiyuv Shmira, anything that falls short of a full-fledged Chiyuv Shmira, which would generate in the case of Shoal, Tashlubei Baman, results or is inherent in the Meshicha itself. But Tvicha, on the other hand, or any onus whatsoever, which has nothing to do with Chiyuv Shmira, that's already a separate Chiyuv Tashlumin that's generated by the Hefsed of the Parah. Or it's even more profound in our case, not an onus. I mean, onus, one could ostensibly see it two ways. You know, you could argue that onus is a chiyuv shmira, even though, again, it's a funny kind of chiyuv shmira, because there's nothing he could have done to prevent the onus, but you could say it's a chiyuv shomer. And shol is a shomer. But now we're talking about a whole different mechayev. He destroyed the life of the animal. He shechted the animal. That's already a chiyuv gazlan. That's already a new category. And what makes him into a gazlan? At what moment or what action precipitates the loss of the animal? That's the act of shechting the animal. That's like anyone who shechts somebody else's animal. He's a gazlan. So he pays for the gzela. In this case, the gzela is the tvicha. There's an equation here between the tvicha and the gzela. That's more or less an overview of what we discussed yesterday. Now, we're going to start our new sugya for today, and that's Omar Rava. So again, let's just make sure we have the place. There's a Tosis on the right side here on Lamed Daled Amud Beis, Dibra Maskal Avol. You drop down about five lines in that Tosis. Omar Rava. Now, this sugya of Rava is, again, touching on the issue of Shoel, and when, at what moment, is the Chiyuv Onsim, in the case of Shoel, precipitated? Is it at the moment of the Ones, when the animal dies, or is it the moment of She'ela? Amar Rava. Now, Rava is talking about a case where heirs inherited a cow from their father after their father's death, and unbeknown to them, that cow did not actually belong to their father. That cow was in fact a borrowed cow. That's called a parasha'ula. And since the Yorshim had no idea that this was she'ula, I mean, this cow basically looks like any other cow, they had every right to assume that they inherited this cow from their father. If they go ahead and slaughter the cow and eat its meat, you cannot call them a poshim. You know, there's no deliberate act of pshia. when it turns out that this paro, unbeknown to them, was a barred paro. Now, Rav has a resha and a seifa. The resha is a case of the animal, of the yorshim, understanding very well that the animal was a barred animal. And the question is, do they have rights to use the animal, and do they have responsibilities to use the animal? What do I mean? A shoel obviously has rights. Yeah, he's allowed to use the animal. That's what shoel is all about. But he also has responsibilities. And in event that the animal dies, he has to pay for that animal. So Amar Rava, hiniach lem avim parasha ula mishtamshim ba kol yimei sheilosa. The rights of the father to use the animal within a certain period of time are transferred to his heirs with his death. So for example, if he died 2 weeks into a 30-day she'elah, then the balance, the other 2 weeks, are the rights that he bequeaths to his yarshim. And in the language of the Ritva, he says, im kov avim zman, so if, let's say, it was set that the father would have 30 days of use of the parah, then the balance after his death is transferred over to the yorshim. Then the Ritva says, v'im lo kova aviyam zman, if the father did not specify a certain time, is mishtamshim ba bizman haroy li oso tashmish shavurat sha'ala avihim. So let's say, for example, if you have an animal that does a certain type of a work that's typical of a particular period of time in the agriculture, so we can shots up, we can evaluate and assume that for the balance of that harvest season or threshing season, whatever it might be, he has rights of she'elah. Now, the Ritva goes on to say that there's another principle that does not apply in this context, and that is stam she'elah shloshim yom. And the Ritva differentiates here between a milva and she'elah. In the case of milva, we have a principle called stam milva shloshim yom, but not in the case of she'ela. Milva is shloshim yom because of a principle called milva lo tsa nitna. But in the case of she'ela, we don't have this principle of she'ela lo tsa nitna. In other words, you're allowed to use the cow, and it's not yours. You know, in the case of milva, the money is transferred over to you, and therefore we assume that transfer is a minimum of 30 days. We don't assume so in the case of she'ela. So if the threshing season was very limited, it was a 2 week season, that's it. We're not going to say stam she'ela shloshim yom, give him a full 30 days. Just for your information, the Shita Mekubetzes writes that even if we were to apply a principle of stam she'ela shloshim yom, but that would only apply vis-a-vis the shoel himself. As far as the yorshim is concerned, we're not going to apply the principle of shloshim yom. But rather, it all depends upon the amount of time that the father specified. He calls it mishtam shemo rak bizman shepiresh aviyem Bishas Hasha'ewa. Now I'm going to assume that what the Shita Mekubetzes means is that we're going to use an umdana, some sort of an estimation, given various circumstances, or perhaps we can find Aiden that testify how long the She'ewa was. Now, we said that Rava's opening statement is that the Yorshim inherit the balance of the time period, the rights of their father to Shaila. What about responsibilities? So that's the next point in Rava, Mesa. Now, Mesa here means that the animal died of old age. It was nothing negligent, there was no hanky-panky here, circumstances beyond his control. And therefore, the issue of responsibilities comes to the fore here when the animal dies. The father himself, as a shoel, certainly accepted upon himself from the Shas Mashicha responsibility in event that the animal dies, for whatever reason the animal died. Does that responsibility transfer over, together with the rights, to the Yorshim? And here's Rava's Chiddush. Rava says, Ein chayavin bi'onso. In other words, the Mashiach of the father, as far as chiyuvim are concerned, is relevant only to the father himself. They, the Yorshim, never accepted upon themselves those responsibilities, the achrayas for paying for own sin. In a certain sense, they get all the benefits of the Sirush of the Sheila without incurring the detriments. Now, even though they're not chayiv in onsim, would they be chayiv for gneva v'aveda? And perhaps we could say the following, that within the context of she'ela, there are really two dimensions. She'ela incorporates two different things. On the one hand, She'ela is a shomer. And on the other hand, he's chayv ba'onsin. Those are fundamentally two different things. The chiyuv of Gneva Vaveda, for example, that comes under the general laws of shomrim. And in the case of She'ela, the rights to benefit from the animal and use the animal, they generate a chiyuv shmira. Then on top of that, to boot, above and beyond the benefits that the shomer gets, or in this case the shoel gets, again, in the case of a shomer, then all the chiyuvim are a result of his chayvus, his commitment, his kabbalah shmira. In the case of a shoel, the chiyuvim of shomer are generated by his hanav, the fact that he's allowed to use the animal. But on top, to boot, there's a separate ischaivus for onsen. That's not something that he has to pay for as a result of the benefit that he gets from the animal, but rather from a special kabbalas achrayus, which gives him a kind of a bailus. So there's chiyuvei shmira, and the chiyuvei bailus, the chiyuvei shmura generated by the hanor, the benefit that he gets as a shoel, the chiyuvei onsim, which are categorized and generated by bailus, that's because of a separate kinyan that he makes with mashichas hapara. So the father has both dimensions in his lifetime, right? He has chiyuvei shmira because he benefits from the animal, and he has a chiyuv b'toras bailim because of the mashicha, with a commitment to pay for onsim. In the case of the Yorshim, we can differentiate between these two dimensions. As far as the chiyuvei shmira that are generated by hana, well, since they're allowed to use the para and they have the rights of the shoel for the balance of the days, therefore they are chayav for chiyuvei shomer. But as far as onsim, which is a unique category that's generated by bailus, and as a result of mashicha, they never acquired that bailus. Again, you may say, well, they're a yorshim, so automatically they require the bailus. No, but this is a different kind of a bailus. This is a bailus that's engendered by a hischaivus. And they were not mischaiv. They never took it upon themselves that they would be chayv for own sin. So again, if the animal is stolen or it's lost, they would have to pay for the animal. Because they have the hanor, they use the animal, and they have the din of a shomer. call it a Shomer Sachar. Shomer Sachar is Chayiv for Gneiva Aveda, insofar as he's allowed to use the animal, they're allowed to use the animal. However, if the animal is through mitigating circumstances is lost, meaning it dies, and that's called onsim, that's not something that you could be mechayev the yorshim, because they never had that separate ischayvus through a meshichas hapora b'toras chiyuv onsim. Again, we can add the following, that as far as chiyuv shomer are concerned, let's say, for example, gneiv aved, an event that the animal is lost or stolen, they would have to pay even if they didn't actually use the animal. We don't have to wait. They have the schus, they have the monetary right, the legal right to use the animal. That's enough to engender a chiyuv shomer. But as far as onsim is concerned, there was no ischayvus. That ischayvus was exclusive to the father, and the father is no longer here. Now again, we didn't get to the Sefer of Rava yet. I just want to add a comment here from the Rush. The Rush is not here in Ksuvos, he's in Bava Kamma. He says that if the Mashil tells the Yisomim, Parizu Hishalti Leavichem Hachziru Ali, O Kablu Aleichem Onsim, if the mashiel, the owner of the cow, would come to the Yorshim after the death of the father and say to them, look, I lent this parah to your father. I want it back now. And if you want to use it and exercise your rights of she'ela within the context of Yerusha for the balance of the time period, then you have to accept upon yourself onsim. So the Rosh is mechadish that the mashiel, the owner of the animal, has rights to do so. Why? Because he has the right to say, to make a claim that, look, I only lent this cow. I agreed that your father could borrow this cow on the condition that he would be mischai bonesim. That was the quid pro quo. I, the mashiel, are giving you, the father during his lifetime, right, the rights to use the animal. You have to give me in return, not payment, I'm not asking you to pay me, it's not a rental agreement, but at least be mischai bonesim, take a mashiach. And therefore, the mashiel, now that the father died, has rights to say that to the yorshim. He could say, look, I can allow you to use the animal, continue to do so, but it's based on the following quid pro quo. I expect from you, and demand from you, a hischayvus to pay for onsen. That's the chiddush of the Rosh. And the Rosh's chiddush is really a gigantic chiddush, because you know, the impression you get from Rava is that in the context of Yerusha, the children, the Yisovim, acquire rights of She'ela, which they inherit from their father. There are no conditions here. The Mashal has no right to terminate that framework of She'ela that he was Makne, you know, he bequeathed to the shomer, to the father as a shoel, those rights of she'ela, and the father now has a right to pass those rights on to his heirs, to the yosomen. Who says that the mashal has rights to step in and say, I want conditions? Yeah, but the answer is that according to the Rush, you know, the rules of the game changed over here with the Yerusha, because all of a sudden the Yorshim are going to get the benefits without the responsibilities. And the Shol could say, I never agreed. The Mashal could say, I never agreed to such an arrangement, which is pure loss on my behalf. I want some sort of a payment, so to speak. I want to know that you're going to be responsible to pay me for the animal, even if it's lost beyond, with circumstances beyond control. Now we get to the Sefer of Rav. Kasvurim shal aviyim hi. They had no clue that this cow was in fact a borrowed cow. They were under the misimpression it's a cow like all the other cows in the herd, and they have rights to inherit their father's cow. So what did they do? Tvachua. Viachlua. Is mishalmin to be bosa bizol. Here's a very unique, sensitive halacha, a principle that is called Dmei Basa Bizol. On the one hand, they enjoyed the benefit of this animal. You know, they shechted it and they ate it. They have to pay for that. But on the other hand, you know, to say that they have chiyuve onsim to pay the full value of the shoel, that we don't say according to Rava. So we find some sort of a almost a compromise, a middle of the road, and we say let them pay for the hanah that they benefited from, but no responsibilities here. You can't say that they are guilty of deliberately stealing someone else's animal. They had no clue that it didn't belong to them. They had every right to assume it belonged to them through the Yerusha. So the middle of the road here, so to speak, is to pay for the hanah that they have, which is called Dmei Basar Bizol. How much would this, you know, if let's say you, you know, there's a slash price, a sale on this basar, how much would you pay for the basar? And that's what they would pay. Let's just see if Rashi here adds anything. Just one second. Okay, right now, all I see in Rashi here, this is right before the middle section of the wide line, so we're still in the skinny lines, which are the bulk of this page of Rashi. Rashi says, Kol zuza chashvinan ba'arba danki. So Rashi invokes a sugya in Baba Basra that tells you what the ratio is between, you know, the market value of the basar, if it had been sold, and what we call Dmei Basar Bezol. So for every zuz, we're gonna be machshiv it as our bar danki. That's a certain percentage of its value. And then Rashi goes on to tell us that as far as what's left from the animal that has value, the R, because they strip the hides of the animal before they eat the basar, that goes back to the bialim, to the mashiv. Now the Ritva says, as opposed to Rashi, that there's no sheer kotzuv. You know, the Gemara Baba Basra is not applicable as a set uniform ratio or percentage. It really depends upon the particulars of any market, any society, wherever you find yourself. So Dmei Basar Bezol is not uniform. It's not standardized, but rather it depends, it's relative to that society. Now, let's just ask the following question. Why is it that they're not chayv to pay the entire value of the parah? Why do they get away with Dmei Basar Bezol? And the answer obviously is because they are not in any way responsible for their actions. It's not a deliberate action. They were anusim. They had no idea that the para belongs to the mashil. So we have a principle here of mazik. And the question is a mazik potter from onsim? Now, in this case, they shechted the animal. That's called adam mazik. And Adam HaMazik is chayev even for onsim. However, we're going to assume, and this is the Shita Tosfos in many places, Baba Basra and elsewhere, that when we say that a mazik is chayev for onsim, it has to have some element of pshia to it. It's what's called ki'ena veda. In our case, the Yarshim, since they're totally unaware of the fact that this animal is not theirs, but really belongs to the Mashiel, that's called pure onus. It doesn't have any element of Karv L'Pshia, Ke'en Aveda. It's called, in the language of Tosfos, Ke'en Gneva. So it's interesting, we usually put Aveda and Gneva together, but they're really different. And Gneva is a much more more of an onus. You know, somebody actually borrows his way in, and a thief, and he steals it. And in such a case, where the onus is karvli onus, it's not karvli pshia, it's really pure onus, it's kein Gneva, you don't pay even under the law of Adam, Mu'ad, the olam of Adam Amazik. But on the other hand, keep in mind, they did benefit from the animal by eating its meat, and therefore they have to pay midin hanos. It's not midin mazik, but betoris hanos. It's a different category. And as far as the chiyuv hanos is concerned, they only have to pay that ratio that we spoke about in Rashi. The Ritva said, again, it was depend upon the particulars of the society, but let's call it 2/3 of the price. And that's what they benefited from it. It's called Shnei Shlish Mimechiro Hamole Shalachefetz. 2/3 of the full value, market value of the object. They don't have to pay the full value of the object, because they can argue that if they would have known that they would have to pay for this hana, they wouldn't have eaten it. But they do have to pay Dmei Basar Bezol, because people, generally speaking, would buy meat at this cheap price. Now, the Rishonim go into detail here about our case, that they didn't have any reason to suspect, to entertain the possibility that this part is not theirs, and therefore they only have to pay Dmei Basar Bezol. But let's say, for example, they ate this para without any rishus. Then they would have to pay the full value of the para. Okay, that's pretty clear. But now we get to the final piece in Rava. This is the most challenging of Rava's presentation. Iniach lem avim achrayis nechosim chayovim l'shalim tmei hapara. Now, what exactly is Rava adding here in this last din of Hiniach lehem avim achrayus nechosim? Now, achrayus nechosim, first of all, that means karka. There's real estate. And we have a principle that a balchov is nechosov, in the case of karka, mishtablim l'balchov. That's in the case of real estate. In the case of metaltel, we have a principle of ena mishtabnu l'balchov. Now, if the father were alive and he had no karka and he had a chiv to pay for onsim, that chiv would be collectible even from movables, even from metaltelin, because of the shivat aguf. But when we get to the yarshim, the yisomim, now we're talking about a shivat nechasim. There's no shivat aguf. They never were mischayev to pay for onsim. However, from the moment that the father took the para, he accepted upon himself a chiyuv to pay in event that there's an onus, and that chiyuv, that payment, was collectible from his mishubadim, from his karka. That's called achrayis nechosim. Now, when the father dies, the children inherit this karka, and therefore they inherit the shibud, the lien, on the karka. So let's see how the Gemara develops a machlokes, two approaches to how to interpret this last statement of Rav. Ika demasni la aresha, the ika demasni la asefa. There were those who interpreted that this din of Rava goes back to the Resha, which is the case where the Yoshim were fully aware of the fact that this parah was parasha ula, but it died ba'onis, and the Rava said in the Resha that the heirs don't have to pay for ons. Now the Sefer comes to qualify that and say the following. If the father left in the estate karka, then they would have to pay, and that's because nichsei avir mishtamlin lebalchov mishasha elas hapora. Remember, we discussed that as far as chiyuvim are concerned, right? With the exception again of an act of gzela, but all the chiyuvim come under the framework of She'ela. And that means they are engendered by the Meshichas Hapara. So from the time of the Meshichas Hapara, the father, in this case, would have incurs a chiv to pay for the animal in event that an onus happens, the animal dies. And that chiv from the Shas Meshicha engenders a lien, a shibud, on his nechse, on his nechasim, on his karka. And that karka was now inherited with a lien on it by the heirs, by the yisomim, and therefore that chov is collectible from the karka itself. That's one way of interpreting Rava. Ve'ika demasli la'asefa, the other interpretation is that this last statement of Rava goes on the sefa, in a case where the Yarshim had no clue that this animal belonged to the Mashil. They went ahead and shechted the animal. They have to pay nothing more than Tmei, Bas, or Bezol. And the Sefer now comes to qualify that if, in event that the father left them karkos, they would have to pay the entire value of the par, not just Tmei, Par, Bezol, two-thirds of its value, but 100% of its market value. And the reason for that is that they should have clarified before they shechted it whether the parah belonged to their father or it didn't belong to their father. There is some sort of element of pshia. That's what Rashi says over here in the Dibra Masva Ika Damasli La Seifa, which we'll find here in the sort of like the box that moves, you know, protrudes to the right on the fifth line there. It says, those last three words, now I notice here an os gimli. Let me just see if there's anything here. In the Hagos v'tziyunim, okay, we have in our text Iboy Lahu. He says Iboy Le. Okay, that's not so relevant to us. But there seems to be a claim against the Yarshim in this case that Hoylehem Levarer Hetev. They should have clarified it. Now the Rishonim are not happy with this Rashi because again, if they were guilty, as Rashi would have it, because they didn't check well, thoroughly, to make sure who owns the paro, whether it really belonged to their father, or maybe it was Sheula Biyado. So what does that have to do with karka? Forget about karka. Let's say there was no karka in the estate. They would still have to pay the dmei paro, the entire value, the full value of the paro, based on the fact that they were guilty of shechting it. Then it goes back to Adam Amazin. As we discussed earlier, we said it wasn't Adam HaMazik here because there was no element of negligence. Now, furthermore, there's another reason to assume that they were guiltless because there's a chazakah, you could establish a premise or an assumption that whatever they find in the house of the morish, of the person who bequeathed it to them, belonged to him. And therefore the Rishonim say that the reason why the payment here is due, full payment, is not because of the Pshia of the Yarshim, but because of the Pshia of the father. That Aviyam Pasha, Shalo Omar Lehem Shepar Zusha Ulahi, he should have left some sort of a clear-cut indication that this particular para is a barred para. I don't know if he anticipated that he would die. Is Kevin Shekane, therefore Mishas Pshia, from the moment during his lifetime that he was negligent in not doing his, you know, due diligence and making it clear to the Yarshim that this was not his parah, but rather it was a barred parah, and from that moment he became Chayev, the father, because of his Pshia. And at that moment, his nechasim become mishubadim to pay for anything that results from that pshia. The Rashba adds another point. He says, this whole story of Ika Demasli Lasef is conditional on the fact that at the end they shechted it and they ate it. Because then we have what's called an Ones Sheba Machmas HaPshia. Here's what the Rashba wants to understand. Let's assume that the father was Poshea because he didn't notify the children, make it clear to them that this is a Parsha Ula. But does that mean, therefore, that if the animal dies of old age, the Yorshim have to pay the full value of the animal? There has to be a relationship between the Pshia and the ultimate loss of the animal. So Bishleim, in the case where the Yorshim shechted the animal, thinking it was theirs, that you can attribute to the pshi of the father, that he didn't notify them that it was a par sheula. But if the par actually died of old age, then that's onsim, which we said there was no chiyuv, there was no eschaibus on the part of the yarshim. And what are you going to tell me? Well, there was a pshia here with the shibud nechasim. Well, this ones of mesa kedarka has nothing to do, it's not in any way attributed or related to the ones, excuse me, to the pshia that the father was guilty of. Now, we don't have really an answer for Rashi. Rashi, as we said, indicates that the Yorshim themselves were poshim. But if you're interested, I'm just giving you a Mara Mokum here. The Shita Mekubetzes offers a number of different possible ways of explaining what Rashi means by Yiboyle Lemedak. And maybe the boy Leila Medak here goes back on the father himself. And that was the Hagos V'Tziyun, and we didn't make a big deal about it, but now it becomes clear that this is important. We have in our text of Rashi, boy Lahu Lemedak, indicating the Yarshim in plural. Lahu is in plural. The other Girus in Rashi is Le, which is in singular. That refers to the father. So it could be that Rashi would agree with all the Rishonim. Otherwise, we're really in trouble with this Rashi. Now the Gemara continues to analyze this by saying the following: Man demasni le aresha is kolshkein aseifa. Now it's this din of shibud nechasim, an event that the yarshim inherited a piece of property. If it applies to the resha, then certainly it should apply to the seifa. Meaning this. Let's say this phantom, or shall we call it anonymous, Mefaresh, would say that if the father left them karka, they would have to pay. In other words, if there's a shibud nechasim on this karka during the lifetime of their father, that's called nishtabdu nichsei ha'av b'chayav l'shalim mehem dmei para. According to the first commentary, we'll call it the Ika Demasli Le'a Resha commentary, if in the Resha, where the animal died of old age, and yet the payment for the full value of the para, of the cow, is extracted from the karka, then how much more so in the sefer, where the animal didn't die of old age, but rather it was shechted and eaten by that gives him even a greater relationship to pay. This becomes clearer when we get to the mind of Masliya sefer, but let's just add the next three words of the Gemara: upliga derav papa. This mind of Masliya resha argues against Rav Papa. Rav Papa was one who said that the Chiyuv Onsim is Chal B'Shas HaOnes, not L'Mafreya B'Shas She'ela. According to Rav Papa, since they were Chayav B'Onsim only from the moment of the Ones, and at that moment the Behemah itself was in the Rishus of the Yarshim, it was not in the Rishus of the father, then there's no Shibud Nechasim. So let's go back a little bit earlier on the Daf, to the words of Rav Papa. Rav Papa mentioned that you would have thought, this is all the Havamina, that just like in Mizonos, there's a Chiv Mishasha Ela, so too, with regard to Onsim, there's a Chiv Mishasha Ela. Kamashbalon, the Maskana is not like that. That as long as the par is alive, the Shoel could return the animal, and therefore there's no Chiv. Again, we applied Rav Papa to the case of Tvicha, which was a Chiv Gzela, but even with regard to Onsim, it's clear from the language of Rav Papa that we don't go back to the Shas She'ela, but rather the Chiv Onsim emerges with the moment of the onus. Here, in the Man Damasni Aresh of Rava, we're going as far as to say that the Chiv to pay for Onsim is Chal during the father's lifetime, Mishas Mishicha, Mishas She'ela. Hence, that Chiv generates a Shiba Nechasin during the father's lifetime. And when the Yorshim inherit this Karka, they have to pay for the full value of the Parah because of the Shiva of the father during his lifetime, Mishas She'ela, to pay for Onsim. Let's go on to the Gemara. So we're talking about a case where the animal was shechted by the Yorshim. Avala Resha, where the animal died by onus, even if the father had left them real estate, low, they don't have to pay. Why? Because according to this Man Demasni Le'aseifa, he's of the opinion that the Chiv Onsim is only Chal B'Shas HaOnes. It's not Chal Mafreya from the time of She'ela. And therefore, there was no Shiba Nechasim of the father's Nechasim. Since B'Shas She'ela, there was no Chiv HaOnsim, then you can only generate a new Chiv at the time of the Onis. That would reflect the Shita Rav Papa, that the Chiv Onsim is not Chalom Afreya from the time of the She'ela, but rather from the time of the Onis. And therefore, if the animal died of old age, even if the Yarshim had inherited Karka, they would not have to pay for the animal's loss. Okay, fine. And the chiv to pay for the onus only emerges at the moment of the onus in the rishus of the yorshim. And here's going to be the difference between the resha and the seifa, according to this second opinion, the commentary that says, Iko de maslilia seifa. In the resha, is ein chayovim be onsa, even if there was real estate in the estate, they don't have to pay for onsim because they never took a chiyuv, as we discussed earlier, to pay for onsim. That was the father's unique chayiv, was not the yorshim, and there was no shibud during the lifetime of the father because onsim generates a chiyuv at the moment of the onus. In the safe, on the other hand, where they shechted the animal. So that's where we have an element of pshia. Forget about Onsim for a moment. As the Rishonim explained, and we mentioned it at great length, the father was responsible, and he should have notified them that this was a parsha ula, etc., etc. Therefore, he was mishtabed during his lifetime at the moment of pshia. And that shiva is chal in the nechasim itself, which is now the heirs, the Yesomim, inherited this karka with the shibud on it, and therefore they'll have to pay the full value of the par. Now, at this point, we are going back to Daf Lamed Aleph Omid Beis, in effect. I don't mean that literally, you don't have to turn back there. But let's just remind ourselves that the Gemara had set up a stira between the Mishnah at the beginning of our perek and the Mishnah in Makkos. And that's the case of Chayvei Malkios. Our Mishnah here in Ksubis establishes that in the case of, let's say, Baal Achoso, where he should be Chayv Malkis, they pay the Knas. When I say they, I mean the Ma'ansim in plural, but the Onis. The Mishnah Malkis, on the other hand, establishes that Baal Achoso gets Malkis. Rabbi Yochanan, back on Daf Lamed Beis, had reconciled this apparent contradiction by saying that our Mishnah is talking about a case where there was no Asra. The Mishnah in Makkos talks about Asra. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, that's already on Daf Lamed Gimel, had established that our Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Meir, who holds that you, in an overlap of Malkus and Momon, you get both. You pay Momon and you get Malkus. Whereas the Mishnah in Masechta Makkos, and then we could say that both Mishnayos reflect Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah emphasizes that you pay Momon, the Mishnah in Makkos, that you get Malkus, and the two are simultaneously correct. Now the Gemara wants to analyze, why is it that Rabbi Yochanan rejects Reish Lakish and vice versa? Bishleim Rabbi Yochanan, we can understand why Rabbi Yochanan rejects Reish Lakish, Lomak Reish Lakish, the Kamukim Le Kirabanan. Rabbi Yochanan's agenda is that we don't want to assume that the Mishnayos reflect the Shita of Rabbi Meir. We pass like Chachamim against Rabbi Meir, right? Yochanan v'Rab Malacha Karab. Ela Reish Lakish, my time alo Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Why not just simply say that one Mishnah, our Mishnah Ksuv, is talking about a case where there was no Asra for Malkus. Hence you pay Knas. Whereas the Mishnah in Malkus is talking about a case there was a Hasra. Omaloch. So Reish Lakish is going to answer the following. Kevan to Ilu Asri Bey. Wow, this is really a very important breakthrough. Reish Lakish is saying that had there been a Hasra in the case of Baal Achoso, he would get Malkus and therefore be potter from Tashlumei Knas. Is therefore Kilo Asri Bey, even when there was no Asra and there won't be any Malkus, potter. Meaning, and we've discussed this in the past, this is just a chazarshi, but it all depends on the aver itself. The aver itself is an aver that would generate malchus. There may be technical reasons why there was no malchus, but if we isolate the avera, Baal Achoso, if we take a video camera, this is a terrible avera that would generate malchus. There's no malchus befall, in actuality. But nevertheless, it's given to malchus. That's called a tzad malchus. And that's enough, according to Reish Lakish, to apply the principle of Eino Loka Mishalim. And Rabbi Yochanan never accepted that. Rabbi Yochanan holds that Kidei Rishoso, Mishum Risha Achas, etc., is only with Malkus Befal. It all depends on whether there was Hasra or there wasn't Hasra. V'azdula Tamayu. This controversy between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is an old one. The Chiyasa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, Omar, he said, Chayve Mises Shogigin, a person who violated a capital crime inadvertently, B'Shogig, let's say there was no Asra, so had he done it B'Mezid, he'd be Chayve Misa, Mezid with Asra, and V'Chayve Malkius Shogigin, and even in the case of a violation of a criminal act, which is not a capital crime, let's say he ate chazer or he wore shatnez, in such a case, if there was no asra, it was a shogeg situation, u'davar acher, and at the same moment, he incurred a chiv mamon. Here we have machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev, he has to pay Momon because there is no Malkus befal, there was no Asra, it's only a Shogeg. And Reish Lakish Amar Potter. Reish Lakish holds that in this case, since the Avera per se would generate a Chiyuv Onish, therefore we apply the principle of Kim Leib de Rav Amine, even though he's a Shogi, even though there was no Asra. Came into Ilu Asruve Potter is Kilo Asruve Nami Potter. Now I'm just looking to see if there's any cross reference here. Just for a second, Azdu Tamai. What is this test over here? Just give me a second. Chulin. Ah, very good. I was hoping to find Chulin. So this machlokas that we're seeing here is a grafted machlokas asugya in Chulin between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish on Daf Pei Aleph in the Iyun Shir, which is the 1145 Shir. That's where we discuss this this Gemara in Chulin. Now, the Gemara at this point wants to go back to the parasha of Kim Levi the Ramine, the Lo Yason parasha, and see exactly how Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish understood this parasha. So let's just read the parasha itself. So this is in Shmos Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beis. I know, Chaim, you like to open up the Chumash. V'chi yinatzu anashim v'nakfu isha hara v'yatzu yiladeh v'lo yasan anoshi anesh kasher yashis alav bala isha v'nasan b'plilim. So the pasuk is talking about a case of a fight, a brawl between two people, and what happened was that a woman got hit. As a result, she lost the vlados. And if lo yasan, if she survives it, then the makeh has to pay tashlumei nezikim for the vlados, the dmei vlados. Now there are two ways of understanding lo yason. We assume that lo yason, that was our assumption from the get-go, is referring to the isha, that if she survives it, lo yason, then he, the makeh, has to pay tashlumei nezikim. But there's another way of interpreting the lo yason. And it's referring to the nogef, to the maka, the one who gave the smack. And that means, im lo yason means if he doesn't have to pay, I'm sorry, if he doesn't have to get killed, he's not chayv misa, then he has to pay for the mei vlados. Now ostensibly that, you know, that's the same, because if she doesn't die, he's not chayv misa, and hence he has to pay the mei vlados. Or if he's not chayv misa, he has to pay the mei. I mean, it basically comes down to, but the difference between the two interpretations, which hopefully become clear as we go along, is in the case where the nogev killed the woman but without a hasra. Let's go back to our first pshat. In our first pshat, there's no difference between hasra and the absence of hasra. Everything depends upon whether or not she dies. And if she doesn't die, then the makeh has to pay dmei vlados. If she dies, the makeh is exempt from dmei vlados in all scenarios, even if there was no asra to the nogev. Because everything depends upon lo yason. According to the second interpretation, everything depends upon whether he's chayav misa, which means everything depends upon whether there was asra. If the nogev, the makeh, did not receive asra, then he doesn't have a din misa. So there was no asra, there's no din misa. And in such a case, he would be chayv in dmei vlados. So Reish Lakish took the first pshat, and therefore he asks his question on Rav Yochanan, as we'll soon see, at the bottom here of Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. The Torah says that it all depends upon whether she died or she didn't die. My love, ason mamish. Now the phrase ason mamish means that lo yason, she didn't die, and therefore the makeh has to pay dmei vlados. The implication is that the chiyuv of dmei vlados only applies in the case of lo yason anoshi anesh. But if she died, yason, then the makeh would not be chai for dmei vlados. Whether or not there was asra is irrelevant. In other words, chai v'misa shogigin are potter from tashlumin. And Rabbi Yochanan answers, lo, that's not what the Torah That's not what the Torah has in mind. The Torah is not referring to a chiv tashlumin only in a case where she didn't die, but rather the pasuk is referring to a chiv tashlumin in the case of dinason, in other words, whether the nogev, the makeh himself, is in a situation described as ason, meaning mishpat mavis. If lo yeh ason, he doesn't have a mishpat mavis, he's not chayv misa befal, then he pays. But if he's chayv misa befal, he doesn't pay, and everything depends upon whether there was asra. Ika diamri. Others say that this was not exactly the kasha of Reish Lakish. The second version is esvei. It was Rabbi Yochanan, on the contrary, who asked the kasha to Reish Lakish. The pasuk says, "V'lo yason anoshi anesh, my love din ason," meaning Rabbi Yochanan understood from the get-go the simple, straightforward shot in the pasuk is: would the nogev be chayv misa? Would he not be chayv misa? In other words, if the nogev is not chayv misa, then he has to pay to make lotus, even if the woman died. For example, in a case where there was no asra, and Reish Lakish responds by saying, "Lo, that's not the pasuk, but rather ason mamish. It's all dependent upon whether she died or she didn't die." So let's just summarize, because here's where we're going to stop for today. The machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish and chayv misa shogun and chayv malkis shogun revolves and depends upon how you interpret this parsha. And specifically these words, "Lo yason." If "lo yason" is referring to the isha, then Reish Lakish is right. Everything depends upon whether she died or she didn't die. If she died, there's no chiv tashlumin, and it's irrelevant to whether it was asra or not. If, on the other hand, you interpret "lo yason" is referring to the din ason, the din misa, and the chiv misa on the makeh, then everything depends upon whether he's chayv misa or not. Hence, Reish Yochanan is correct that if there was no asra, and we cannot put him to death, and he has to pay dmei vlados. And there's no din of kimlei ramadi based on the avera per se. Reish Lakish, now we're getting into the conceptual machlokes. Reish Lakish puts all the emphasis on the avera. What's the nature of the avera? Forget about the gavra, talk about the heft of the avera. It was clearly a chiyuv misa dik avera, despite the fact that the gavra is not going to be put to death because he didn't have a hasra. If the Avera is a Chiv Misa Dik Avera, the Chiv Misa is sort of like inherent in the Avera in concept, in theory, in a conceptual world, that's enough to engender Kimlei B'Ramini. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion, no, that Bezdin is hands are tied before, they cannot implement a Chiv Misa and a Chiv Momon, but if they're not implementing a Chiv Misa, Lo Yason means that there was no Asra, therefore, there's a chiv mamon, and we don't apply the principle of kimlei b'dirameinei. So let's just make a note of where we got to. We're on daf lamed hei amud aleph, and we're up to Amar Rava, right? Which is basically four lines down from the top of daf lamed hei amud aleph.